to the Gym Podcast. Uncut, unfiltered, unreal.
Welcome everyone to the Gym Podcast. Welcome folks. I'm your host, Jimbo Fisher. Joining this week, as always, is the one, the only, arch rival for this one week only, Randy Darsh.
Hello, everybody. I'm very excited. We obviously have a very special game to talk about this week. We're going to get to that later in the episode. I mean, I don't want to spoil it for those who might know, but,
yeah,
you know, that LSU South Carolina game, we really do have to talk about it, right?
Game day. Game day is going to South Carolina. So, I mean, this is a,
yeah,
this is a pretty big deal. Everyone's talking about
that's
this
the game we're talking about. I mean,
well, let's not spoil too much, Randy. Let's not spoil too much. We'll say that for the end. Randy, first of all, welcome. Fun week of football, wouldn't you say? Really fun Saturday.
It was. I remember us saying on the podcast last week, oh, wow, this week, too, looks pretty boring. I just, you know, it's not a whole lot. But I love this sport because even in the quote-unquote boring weeks, we still get, like, amazing upsets, theatrics, dreams come true, dreams completely dashed. I love that college football, you know, I'm not going to go on too big of a tangent about this, but I love that it seems like the amateurish nature of the sport is being preserved to an extent despite the money that's now injected into it.
Right.
Like, the nature of 18 to 22-year-old athletes means they're never going to get paid quite as much as NFL or actual professional athletes, right? But they're still going to get some money.
Right.
So it's retaining that kind of amateurish vibe, which I absolutely love. And so I'm very just optimistic for the sport in general because, like, these kind of leagues are going to get – they're going to happen even more often.
Right. I mean, I think we need to talk right away out of the gate here. Biggest upset of the weekend, of course. Number 5, Notre Dame. Sorry, Irish fans. Going down to Northern Illinois. This is a great example, Randy, of what you're talking about. 18, 19-year-olds playing bad football. It can happen to anyone.
It was a great, interesting game because whenever you see like a lower rank, like a group of 5 team beat a power 5 team, now power 4 team, it's usually like through the air, through fast players, through mismatches. But Notre Dame got bully balled. One thing I kind of noticed that I think is funny, you know how NBC only like has Notre Dame rights, right?
Yes.
Have you noticed a bit of bias in their commentary?
Okay, I got to go off on a tear, Randy. You're triggering me here. So here's the thing, right? As much as like I rag on ESPN for having, you know, SEC bias, I mentioned this to you, Randy, this weekend. NBC has like a contractual obligation to hype up Notre Dame. And so like during the broadcast, it felt solemn in a way. Like once they realized Notre Dame was in trouble, like the tone of the broadcasters, it was like dire. You know what I mean? And like NBC has so much to lose if Notre Dame is bad. You have to consider this, right? If an SEC team loses, like there's a big upset, like Bama loses or something, like, yeah, ESPN wants Bama to win, but it makes for great content. Like, people are going to tune in because Bama lost, right? If Notre Dame loses and Notre Dame sucks and is irrelevant, no one's going to care. Like, just no one's going to watch NBC if that's the case. So, like, they literally need Notre Dame to be relevant. And that's the problem.
I was going to say, like, when Notre Dame loses, you don't have a bunch of angry rednecks calling Feinbaum on Monday morning, right?
Oh!
With Alabama, like, there's so much interest no matter win or lose. With the SEC and Big Ten, even in general, there's just so much drama surrounding everything that happens.
Yeah, and I mean, for what it's worth, NBC, man, like, it really is weird. Like, I have this vision in my mind of a person who's, like, a Notre Dame fan, and in their household, they only watch NBC. Like, they refuse to watch CBS
the
or
ABC. Ultimate Chicago area normie.
Right. And to them, like, this is an NBC household. I'm serious, dude. Like, that is the vision I have in my head of the average Notre Dame fan this time. And listen, I'm not trying to hate on our Irish fans. I know we got listeners here. But, folks, there's other networks. There are other networks
to
watch.
Okay, there was one point where, do you remember, like, the controversial fourth down spot for the NIU running back?
Yes!
The commentators were very clearly having a biased vested interest in Notre Dame winning that game. It's like, oh, he's clearly short. There's just no way to prove that he got the
first
down.
It was so obvious. It was obvious in real time.
Oh, my bro, come on.
Yeah, it was obvious in the replay. Like, he was a solid yard past the fourth down, or the first down marker. And, like, thank God it didn't end up costing NIU the game, but, like, it very easily could have, right? If they missed that field goal, like straight up, the game is basically rigged at that point, you know?
Speaking of Group of Five teams in Northern Illinois, do you have like a, I feel like we should mention what, since a Group of Five team is not guaranteed a playoff spot, do you have a clue or a guess as to which Group of Five team is going to represent?
It's a good question. I see a lot of people hyping up NIU. They're like, everyone's number 25 now.
Bro, they're going to go 5-7.
Like, they're not good. Like, no offense to NIU, but like, it's, that game is a lot more about Notre Dame than it does about NIU. No,
well, honestly, here's the thing.
Yeah.
I was going to say, the thing about teams like NIU, you see this happen all the time where a Group of Five team will upset a Power Five team early in the season.
Yeah.
And they, you know, everybody hypes up and then they end up going 5-7 or something right. like that.
Right.
That happens all the time. And I wonder if a big part of that has always been because ultimately that game was circled on their schedule all offseason. That was their Super Bowl.
Literally.
Right.
Yeah. It's like the one.
But nowadays it's like, oh, hey, like that's all they have to play for because, you know, it's a Group of Five team. Their postseason doesn't really exist.
Right.
I mean, sure, they play to win their conference, I'm sure. But that's all kind of like, yeah. I feel like they would rather beat Notre Dame and then lose their conference.
Oh, legitimately. For sure.
But now with the expanded playoff, I kind of wonder if they're going to stay a little bit more focused as the season goes on. Mm. They want to go to the playoffs. They're going to go to the playoffs and think, hey, we just beat a top five team on the road. We can go win a playoff game.
Right. I mean, they can't, but I get what you're saying. I do understand what you're saying. It'll be interesting
they're
to see.
They're going to believe it. After performing like that, after standing up physically like that, I think that they're going to believe it. Mm. And you have to believe it before you do it.
I'm
going to
call it right now in week 3. The G5 representative in the first playoff is going to be Boise State. Quote me on this. They lost to Oregon, but at least, Oregon's not a good team either. But, like, I don't know. Like, to me, barely losing to Oregon is more impressive than beating Notre Dame at this point.
I know people hate the term quality loss, but yeah. I legitimately feel like it applies to business. And it's because think about it. You know, that, it says a lot to show that you can match up in these kinds of games.
Yeah.
Especially to Oregon. I feel like people will respect that game against Oregon more than people will respect this game against Notre Dame because Notre Dame's kind of known for doing this.
Like, they lost to Marshall a few years ago. Like, this isn't the first
time.
Notre
Dame's known for doing this, but then still somehow getting 10 wins.
Exactly. And I'm sure Notre Dame will be fine. I just don't think they're a playoff team anymore. But, like, yeah, this just kind of seems symptomatic of Marcus Freeman's team, if I'm being honest.
Exactly. All right. So that was a long segment for one game. let's go ahead and move on to
what we got.
Texas, Michigan.
Yeah. All right. SEC. Go ahead. Lay it on me.
Do you think Texas can keep up this firepower, or do you think Michigan was just that bad and fraudulent?
Both. I think both are true. I think Texas. I said last week Texas is very legit. I think Michigan is fraudulent. So I think both teams kind of, what we saw is what we got. Like, that's, Texas is really good and Michigan is not very good. I think that'll stay true throughout the rest of the season.
Do you think that they really opened up their playbook? Like, I mean, I know a lot of teams have been criticized this year specifically because of how a lot of teams have looked against lower level competition, right, which is pretty unique for this year. I mean, I wonder how much of that is Texas 100% opened up their playbook and came ready to play, versus other teams are not quite fully opening it up yet, kind of keeping their cards close to their chest.
I think with Texas, though, like, for what it's worth, what really won them this game, in my opinion, was their run game. I mean, they had, I'm looking at the stats here now, 32 rushes for 143 yards, which might not sound like all that crazy impressive, but they outgained Michigan by almost twice as many yards, and they dominated in time of possession. They, at least in the first half there, it felt like they had the ball for what, like, 20 of the first 30 minutes. Like, they just had the ball the whole time. And
to be fair to that, you can absolutely have like a creative run game,
sure,
so to speak, that versus a run game where it's very straightforward, that you are not kind of showing everything you got as far as formations and blocking schemes and all that.
It didn't,
I get what you're saying.
Yeah, it was pretty vanilla.
Physically were better.
They were man, Texas, this is the most physical Texas team I've ever seen. I'll say it, man. I think Texas is ready for Georgia. I think they're ready for Bama. I think they're ready for just about anyone in the country. So,
I mean, yeah, they absolutely are. They were in the playoff last year. They beat us last year.
So I don't know, man. To me, they're the team to beat. They're probably my number one team right now, I think, just based off of resume this year. So
I think at this point in the year, you kind of have to put them number one.
Just, yeah, based off of resume.
But I also think Michigan might be a lot worse.
Oh, they definitely regressed.
I think legitimate maybe 7-5 team.
Given their schedule, I don't see that. I mean, I'm looking at it now. Like, they're probably going to lose to Ohio State and Oregon, but, like, they've got so many
gimmies.
Their
head coach hasn't even signed a contract yet. So.
Wait, really? I didn't know this. Tell me more.
Yeah, he still has not signed a contract. I don't know what's going on with that. I just know that's a huge talking point.
Really? How am I hearing this for the first time? So is he still like the interim head coach? Is that how they're...
I think that's what it is. So he probably still has like the same-ish salary as he had as an OC.
Oh my god.
Like they kind of know some show cause stuff might be coming. They're kind of staring down the barrel of some NCAA penalties.
That's true.
But they're totally innocent though. If you believe Michigan fans, they're totally innocent.
Yeah,
it's all coincidence.
They're in such a weird...
It's dollar sign PN.
They're in such a weird gray area, I think, because of the NCAA investigations, where, like, they're probably not ready to commit to anyone until, like, you know, things die down. But that might not be for a few more years, given how slow the NCAA operates. Should be interesting.
Also, next, I'm going to move on to Colorado.
Yes.
Nebraska. Colorado, what was it, 10-28? Nebraska just destroyed them, and it didn't even look that close.
Yeah, the final score is not indicative. I mean, that first half was glorious as a Colorado hater. Nebraska was up 28-0, I believe, at half. Where do we even begin with this?
Is the Theon experiment officially over? Let's begin with that.
So, great question. I mean, yes, he's clearly checked out. He's not going to be there next year. I think. Can we both agree on that, Randy? Is Deion not going to be there?
Once his son's gone, he's gone. Once Travis Hunter's gone, he's gone.
His son, Travis. Exactly, dude. I think the only question really with Deion is, I think I might be kind of crazy here, man. And not to change subjects too much, but like, do you think Deion goes to Florida State at the end of the season?
Not as a coach. Maybe to like live in Tallahassee or something. He could get a house there.
I mean, this is an insanely hot take. I think Deion Sanders goes to Florida State next season. I think
he's just too poisonous to touch at this point because of all the things that...
Well, let's talk about it.
His locker room culture is horrible, dude. And you can see it just epitomizing the way Shador can act. So there was a point in the game where it was televised with 2 minutes left to go. Shador Sanders, he has like some freaking bodyguards that say Sanders in the back of their shirts.
A
whole group. The Sanders crew just walking into the locker room and all this stuff. And it's like, bro, you're the quarterback of the team. You stay out there on the field with your team and handle the loss like a man.
Yeah.
You have to take leadership. And then in the press conference, he says, how many times did Dylan Raiola get hit, huh? And it's like, bro, you are the quarterback. You need to take responsibility for that. I get your offensive line is struggling, but as a quarterback, when your offensive line is struggling, there are things you can do to help them. You can, like, recognize that, say, hey, bro, I got you. Get the ball out a little bit quicker. Maybe, you know, draw up a few plays. Tell the coaches, hey, they're struggling. Let's call these plays. Kind of run some of these looks. You can help them out. Instead, he leaves them out to dry and just blames them for the loss. It's a horrible locker room culture that he's fostered. And it's he's a bad leader. And it's – when it's – I understand, you know, you can't always blame these things on the head coach, but when it's the head coach's son and he is emulating his dad, like, it paints a picture.
I learned it from you, Dad. Yeah, I mean, the whole family is full of narcissistic jerks. I've been feasting this whole week, honestly, as a hater, because I do think that Deion, as a person, is extremely bad for the sport. I've gone on the record time and time again saying this, but yet again... He is toxic. He is a bad role model. He is honestly, like, seriously, he is an embarrassment to this sport. No other coach does this. Like, even the bad coaches have respect. You know what I mean?
He really reminds me of PJ Fleck, but a very more outspoken, exaggerated version of it, where he so makes everything about the program about him. And I understand a place like Colorado, they don't have the most tradition in the world, but they have things that they're proud of.
They've won
a national championship before.
They can't play the fight song anymore.
Oh, that was another thing. Deion Sanders, they don't put the fight song when Shador scores anymore because Deion went to the band and said, hey, you're no longer playing the fight song when my son scores. We're going to play his stupid rap song that he made instead.
I didn't even know he had a rap song. But Randy, you were such
a charlatan bullcrap, dude.
You were in the band. So I can't imagine how the band would be feeling about this.
We'd be really ticked off because it's a big part of the sport is having the band and the other students involved in the experience.
I agree.
And it's also like, okay, what I love about Alabama is once a year during the offseason, during practice, our players will take time out of their practice to come with the band, visit with us, and learn the lyrics to the fight song and learn how to sing it. And they get really into it and enjoy it. They still do that in this era of college football and really embrace the university.
Yeah.
There are ways to keep a cohesive kind of university identity mm-hmm. in this new era, although there are certainly, you got to learn how to do it, but it's still possible.
Right.
Deion is completely trying to abandon all of that, and it doesn't work.
No, I'm glad he's being exposed. I still think back to Randy like 2 weeks ago when you said Colorado's going to win the Big 12. Are you willing
to?
No,
I never said it. Fake news.
All right, we'll retcon that one.
Don't go back and listen to that episode to prove it.
No. But yeah, I do think he's done this season. And for what it's worth, I'm glad. Like, I don't care about Colorado, man. I just want Deion out of the sport. Like, we cannot enable this kind of behavior. We really can't.
We have a similar issue with Florida State, where on third downs, they always play the war chant, right?
Yeah.
Apparently, the players have voted, and they said they don't want to hear the war chant on third down. They want to hear stupid, piped-in, dubstep, EDM trap music
really?
On third down.
Really?
Yes! They're getting, yes, they don't want them to play the war chant on third down anymore.
Darn them.
And it's like, again, I get we're in a new era, and players mm-hmm. don't have the same commitment, but there is a way to foster it. And kind of develop that pride for the university and pride for the uniform you wear
yeah.
that isn't so narcissistic.
Yeah. No, I it's definitely hard to do these days just given like the I mean we sound like such boomers right now. But like again, given like the transfer portal, so many of these guys don't go to the school there for more than 1 year, you know. So I imagine for them it's like the commitment to the program and like the culture is probably just not as ingrained.
Caveat. If you notice, the teams that rely the most on the transfer portal are the ones that get the most hyped and then do the worst. The teams that still rely heavily in recruiting mm-hmm. and then only use a transfer portal for to fill in 4 or 5 gaps
yeah.
or maybe filter out 4 or 5 players per offseason, those are the ones that are the most successful. At yeah. most, you should maybe filter out 5 to 7 players, like have 5 to 7 different roster spots as a result of the portal. Recruiting is right. still extremely important.
Oh, especially for positions like the offensive and defensive line, you know, like these units that need to stick together for years on end and like develop. I think it can be good for skill positions, you know, like receiver or like maybe running back. But again, you look at Colorado, to bring them back and bury them one more time, that O-line, dude. Yikes. Like
it's bad, but they're being hung out to dry. They're not getting help at all by their quarterback, and they should be.
Yeah.
They could. Their offensive line has talent. But the thing is, the players are so selfish and a little bit narcissistic to the point that they refuse to look at the situation and say, what can I do for my teammates so we can have a better chance to win the game? They don't want to look at the situation like that.
Yeah. Unreal.
One thing I wanted to say about, you know, regarding all of this is I'm really glad that we seem to have struck a very nice balance between piped in music and keeping the band involved at Alabama. Like, I love that we've found the perfect harmony of that, because it's like, I'll say this, that Bryant Denny, like the first 7 minutes of the first quarter, the last 7 minutes of the second quarter, and the first 7 minutes after halftime of the third quarter, mm-hmm. it's pretty much constant piped in music. And that's because the band is either going into the stands or leaving the stands.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's always like it's very clear, you know, when the band is going to play versus you know when the piped in music was going to play. So for example, the band always is the one who gets priority right after each play. And they play right the second the play ends, they play, they're ready.
Mm-hmm.
But then when it comes to, like, before play, if there's more time, that's when the piped in music comes in. So, for example, third downs, we always, going back to when I went to Bama games as a kid in the early 2000s, third down, we know Hell's Bells is coming on.
Wait,
like, piped in Hell's Bells.
You guys don't play third down for what?
No, we don't. That's Tennessee.
I know, I'm joking. Do they still do that, by the way?
I don't think they still do that because they kept having to play it.
Oh,
they
my
kept
God. Getting,
they
yeah, kept
getting converted on.
That's funny.
After you hear it for the 15th time, you're like, yeah, we're not stopping anything.
But yeah,
like that's a tradition. Hell's Bells is a pipe to music tradition. Is like, it's cool. It's part of it. But it shows that we know there's, again, a way to strike a healthy balance in this modern era of college football. Keep traditions. Keep pride about your university while appealing to some of these new modern trends, right? There is a way to do it. You just have to be smart enough and be willing to do it.
Shedeur Sanders is not that smart, unfortunately.
No, he's not. I mean, they almost have this like quick money attitude.
Oh, they're grifters.
They think
for
very short term.
They
think very short term in everything they do.
I'd say, I hate to say, and again, I'm going to sound like a boomer, but I feel like Colorado is a reflection of society. It's a reflection of NFTs, the metaverse, drop shipping. Is that what it's called?
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Grifting of all shapes and sizes, and it's come to college football, and it needs to stop. It needs to stop.
I agree. Colorado is like the ultimate, in its purest form, the worst part of this modern society, just condensed into a football team.
Yeah, they are. They really are.
I didn't mean to turn this into an existential rant.
Well, it's a good thing to cover in this. In the wake of this awesome beatdown that happened. Let's talk about other games, though, Randy. Any other games we want to talk about that happened this weekend?
Can I say one more thing?
Go for it.
This is going to be very interesting going forward. Colorado is also a legitimate case study by future head coaches on, like, how bad you could do without an offensive line despite how great your skill players are.
True.
And general team chemistry.
You need a line. It's the bread and butter of every football team.
Yep.
All right. Other games, right?
All right.
Other things this weekend that stood out to you. Anything else?
I've noticed a lot of teams still, again, struggling with lower-level competition. We struggled versus South Florida.
True.
Obviously, the Northern Illinois-Notre Dame game happened.
Oregon.
Boise State. And Oregon.
Yep. Penn State.
Bowling Green.
Yeah.
Let's see.
Oklahoma-Houston. No one's talking about this one. What happened there? Like, yeah.
I have no idea. I didn't get to watch the game.
Same. I was busy.
LSU was in a dogfight with Nicholls State for a while.
Yeah, in the first half.
Arizona struggling with Northern Arizona. They were losing at halftime.
Kind of wild. I think it's, again, more of kind of what we were talking about last week with, some teams are just struggling, I think, to kind of gel on offense. I've certainly seen it with Wisconsin. And again, given the new era, like a 3-and-out these days, man, or a turnover these days, whoo, that can really bite you if the opponent gets like an 8-minute drive off of your turnover, totally.
You gotta come in ready to play. You can't necessarily, like, you do still have to play yourself into the game, but you have maybe one drive to do that, to really figure it out. You have to make very quick adjustments.
Oh, very.
Nowadays.
Yeah, yeah.
But you also have to like trust your players a lot more. The coaches, the teams that really struggle aren't trusting their players a lot. You see that with Oregon, where you have to trust your players and trust your playmakers to make plays.
Interesting.
And they kind of aren't necessarily, I don't know, it's hard to explain.
How I've seen it, I guess, firsthand with Wisconsin, for example, is I feel like, at least with like Luke Fickell, and I'd be curious if you've noticed this with other teams, I've noticed that Luke Fickell is afraid to give the ball to the guy with the hot hand. Like, if we've got a guy who's like, getting a bunch of yards every carry, he'll put him in for like three plays and then like take him out and sub in another running back or like another wide receiver. And like, I don't know, man, like part of me feels like if you've got a guy who's balling out and like averaging 8 yards a carry, just keep feeding him the ball, man.
The game just has short nowadays. They won't be too tired at the end. They'll be all right.
Yeah, exactly. But again, part of me also thinks maybe they're just trying to, it's early in the season. They're trying to, test out different parts of the playbook, test out different players, especially transfer guys who, like, you want to see how they look.
And on the same token, make certain players happy that they're getting touches so they don't get mad and leave. I doubt both you or us have been showing our whole playbook.
True.
I'm sure we're hiding a lot of things, kind of keeping it simple and vanilla. I noticed that with our USF game is we very much did show nothing on offense.
Right.
It was a lot of very basic plays and formations. We threw the deep ball like probably 20 times.
That's Alabama.
We threw so many deep balls. I can tell Kalen DeBoer loves throwing deep balls. And I look back at some Washington highlights with Michael Penix.
Oh, yeah.
And yes, Kalen DeBoer's offense, he loves chucking deep balls, and I'm actually very excited for that.
We'll talk about that in a bit. We'll talk about this coming weekend in a bit here. But yeah, in general, though, I think we saw a lot of teams continue to struggle. I do think it'll get better as the season goes on, though. I do think that we're starting to see some teams start to gel. For what it's worth, Clemson won by like 40 points or something after getting humiliated by Georgia. So I guess it's possible for some places to get their act together.
Yeah, guaranteed it's App State, but App State's a good program.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know where this came from, but Clemson scored 35 points in the first quarter. I hate to say it, I'm actually impressed. Like, that's not easy to do even against a bad team. So, I don't know what's going on there.
Yeah, and another team, just very quickly, another team I want to say I'm keeping my eye on now is Tennessee. Ooh. Tennessee beat North Carolina State 51-10.
Did you watch that one? I was able to catch quite a bit of
it. I didn't get a chance to watch it. It was a Duke's Mayo Classic.
It was a Duke's Classic, let me tell you. No, it was Tennessee was good. Like, they honestly looked really physical in a way. That kind of reminds me of Texas, where, like, you don't really think of Tennessee as a physical team, but, like, they looked good against NC State. And I know NC State kind of sucks, but I could see Tennessee being a fringe playoff contender at this point.
I mean, we're on a collision course. We're on a collision course with Georgia and Tennessee at this point, so, and Oklahoma, I guess.
Well, after, we'll see how Oklahoma is this year, but no offense to Koss.
I mean, again, it's hard to get a lot from these games, but.
Yeah, I know what you mean. All right, real quick, before we jump into the Week 3 previews, we have to do the segment, Randy. This is a fan favorite. This was their Super Bowl. I will start. Congratulations to Nebraska on winning your Super Bowl. I'll be honest, I don't think I've ever seen Nebraska fans as happy as they are, like, this week. Like, it's actually probably been years since they've been this happy. So congrats.
To be fair, it probably has to feel nice being a blue blood and having people cheer for you
for once.
Instead of just like piling on. Like, they're so, especially in the past decade, man, they're so used to just being piled on with their suffering.
Yeah.
It feels good to have everybody behind them and celebrate their wins.
Yeah, that said, screw them. I hope they lose the rest of their games. But congrats to Nebraska just this once. Who do you got
for me? I'm going to give the award to Oregon.
Wow.
They were very, because they had a 3-point win versus Boise State, another struggle win, and they are really celebrating. Well, look at their running back, Ashton Jeanty. He's a Heisman candidate, which he is a Heisman candidate. And they're kind of using the fact that they have a Heisman candidate running back as like this proof that they played some great, amazing, tough team.
It's cool.
You know what I mean?
I do.
It's absolutely cool. I get that he's great. They took the ball out of his hands in their final drive when the game was tied. So
yeah, ridiculous. Not giving it to the hot hand. I mean, this is back-to-back weeks that Oregon's almost lost to a non-power team. Man, red flags everywhere. I think Oregon is very sus and will be exposed. So I'm looking forward to this, dude. I'm looking forward to the duck downfall.
We'll see how it goes.
We'll see.
All right, so are you ready to move on to week 3?
Let's do it. What games do we have, Randy? Any games happening this weekend?
I just don't know if there's any interesting games we should talk about.
Okay, I think we got to do a go for it. I think we just got to discuss, honestly, probably the single biggest matchup in Gym Podcast history.
the 4 years we've done this podcast, this is what it's all led up to, is this Alabama-Wisconsin game.
Yes. And I like how irrelevant it is, too.
We've both had this circle for a while.
I don't know. Like, whatever. I'll just call and say, I know we're going to lose. Like, whatever. I just wanted to keep it close.
You're trying to jinx it. Your jinxing doesn't work.
It's fine.
Here's my honest prediction for how the game's going to go.
Okay.
It's going to be a very close game. You say this now.
Okay.
It's going to be close into the fourth quarter.
Yep.
Going into the fourth quarter, Camp Randall is going to do jump around,
yep,
jump up and get down.
He will.
And it's going to be like either tied, we're barely winning, but you have the ball. You know, you're even winning, but we have the ball. Something like that.
Okay.
And you're going to be, everything you're telling me about how we're going to lose is going to go out the window.
My stomach will be in knots. Yeah.
But what's going to happen is we're going to be Alabama. We're going to do what we do. And we're going to all of a sudden, just out of nowhere, Jalen Milrow is going to break off some amazing 80-yard run where he just stiff arms 8 players.
Yeah.
Or there's going to be like a 70-yard touchdown pass to Ryan Williams.
Yeah.
And you're like, where did that come from?
Here's the thing, dude. What you're describing actually is very similar to what happened last season when we hosted number 3 Ohio State. We were only trailing by a touchdown heading into the fourth quarter, and I believe we actually had the ball too. And it was like, holy crap, there's kind of maybe technically a chance. And sure enough, they totally blew it. I mean, this is kind of what happens, man, against really talented teams. You guys just generally have way more depth and just kind of conditioning to play a full game like this. And I mean, we saw with USF last week, right? Like, the fourth quarter comes and it's just like, Bama can kick it into a higher gear that most teams cannot. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and granted, with the new clock rules, we've said this time and time again that it matters a little bit less. I mean, Wisconsin is going to have a lot more players, a lot better players, more physical players than USF.
Sure.
So you could probably keep up to the extent that it's going to matter. It's just, it takes one play right when you get beat in the fourth quarter.
I know. Okay.
All of a sudden, Ryan Williams is running past your DB, wide open.
Yep.
If Noro can make the throw, takes one play.
My one hopium, for all of this is, as bad as Wisconsin is overall as a team, the one area, and I'm going to knock on wood, because I'm probably jinxing it right now, the one area I think we're actually good on defense is our secondary. We have some really good safeties and DBs who I think will be able to at least compete with Bama's wide receiving crew. And so, yes, I'm sure they'll get beat. I'm sure they will. But I'm saying there's a chance they don't. And I think that's the only way Wisconsin has a chance, is if we can prevent those huge plays from happening like you're describing. So there's my hopium. That's my hopium right now.
I know South Florida really struggled with that. They had the kick. They basically had to tackle Ryan Williams a ton of times. We probably drew so many pass interference plays from those types of deep balls.
Yeah.
I'll be curious to see if Wisconsin DBs draw those or like actually hand fight and are able to kind of keep up without drawing the penalty.
Yeah. I don't know. I'll say this real quick. It's going to be fun to see Alabama in person. I got to say, I'm looking forward to this as like the number one hater in the world.
Another thing is, you're getting to see a preview. You get to see how you really stacked up against Alabama.
Yeah. This is a good test.
And it's not a conference game, so there's not nearly the same amount of pressure, right?
That's how I'm approaching this, honestly, is it's like, whatever. Like, this isn't going to affect the Big Ten standings. And, like, what I want to see, honestly, is a competitive game. Like, I want to see our guys try and, like, really, you know, keep it close at least until late in the game. Because I think if we can do that, we'll be able to compete with most teams on our schedule this year. You know, I think it'd be a big confidence boost, even in a loss. We were just talking about quality losses. Like, there is the potential here where Wisconsin has a quality loss against Alabama. That's my hope.
And least. Again, if you happen to go, I don't know, even if you go 10-2, you have a fairly favorable schedule. Because, no. I mean, you still have to play at USC. You have to play Penn State, Oregon, Nebraska.
USC scares
me. Those are four manageable games.
But yeah, Penn State and Oregon, I'm going to knock on wood again. They don't scare me nearly as much as they used to. I think we win one of those two, Penn State or Oregon. Both of those teams are sus as hell. So, I don't know, man. It should be fun. Oh, my God.
I'll say this about Luke Fickell. Is it does seem like he's building your team the right way.
How so?
He's doing things to get some immediate success while also prioritizing high school recruiting.
He's recruiting a lot.
Yeah. He's recruiting high school, but also using the portal, poking some gaps, and he's not selling out to have immediate success to save his job or whatever. He doesn't have to, so he's kind of got that luxury.
Mm-hmm.
So it's year two of, I know a lot of people kind of throw out the idea of the rebuild and say it's not a thing anymore, but it still really is a thing for your program.
Build
a cultural, kind of bring back the identity or kind of modify the identity a little bit. I mean, the Dairy Raid, I'm going to say, is a cool identity.
Yeah, many are saying the Dairy Raid is a place for what it's worth.
It's cool. No, it's unique. It's cool. Like, it's actually marketable. You know what I mean?
Tyler Van Dyke, you're not going to believe this, Randy. I believe he has more yards on the season than Jalen Milroe over the air.
I wouldn't be surprised. Milroe is not...
He's a running guy.
He's the Tyrod Taylor of college football quarterbacks. He can throw a deep ball and he can run, but that intermediate game ain't happening.
Tyler Van Dyke is the literal opposite. He only throws short passes. So it should be a fun matchup to see how that stacks up here. But yes, this is the Jim Bodcast game of the century. I look forward to you know, live posting and stuff when I'm at the game. And dude, I'm looking forward to seeing Alabama fans in person. I am. I really. Are you guys nice?
The ones that can afford to travel are going to be the better behaved ones. I'll just say that.
That's probably true. Yeah. I will say, I'm serious, Randy. I'm thinking of going to Alabama next season.
You should. You next should. Year.
See Brian Denny. It's probably my one opportunity. So, great excuse to try out some Alabama barbecue as they hype up.
Yeah, there you go. All right. I think we've said enough about that game. It's really hard to do the game justice for what it means for the podcast.
We'll recap it next week, I'm sure, as well. So, yeah.
Oh, yeah. All right, so what other games are there going to be next week that are really noteworthy that we should look at?
Well, so, I mean, there are a couple of interesting rivalries, I guess you could say, but they're not that important. So, like, Oregon plays Oregon State this year, next week, I should say, which is weird, because normally they play the final game of the season, right? But with the conference stuff, it's like they're playing this now. I can't believe I'm saying this, dude. I think Oregon State might beat Oregon. And I say this is the biggest Pac-2 hater in the world. What do you think?
You know what? I could see it. I could
like Oregon State's gonna be mad, dude. They're gonna be so mad. And I'm pretty sure this is at Oregon State.
Okay, so you know how whenever you click on a team on ESPN, on the right side you see like the conference standings.
Oh yeah.
It's hilarious because I clicked on Oregon State and on the right it says 2024 Pac-12 standings and it literally just has Oregon State and Washington State listed.
It's crazy. I honestly think Oregon State's gonna win this one the more I think about it. Like it's a home game for Oregon State, like dude, Oregon has been sleepwalking this entire they're so cocky. And Oregon fans are so cocky, too. Have you noticed this?
Yes.
The biggest jerks,
that's
dude.
Why I said the Boise game was their Super Bowl.
Oh, my God. They just, they literally think, it, like, the Big Ten Championship is just, like, a lock. They're going to be, like, going to buy in the playoffs. They're, like, a lock for the national title. It's like, you guys are almost losing to Idaho and Boise State.
Yeah, they have definitely drank the Kool-Aid, so to speak.
They have. So, dude, give me the Beavers. Give me the Beavers. Lock of the week.
Okay.
Oregon State lock beats Oregon. Week. You heard it here first, folks.
You know what? Should I get my lock of the week? Because I have one.
Please, send it my way.
South Carolina defeats LSU.
Is that even a hot take? With all the respect,
I don't think so. Because South Carolina struggled mightily versus Old Dominion. And then they turned it around against Kentucky. Shane Beamer has a good track record of, like, he never lets a struggling performance get to his team's head. And he always seems to know how to improve the team week to week. Like, he always uses losses and setbacks as ways to catapult his team and kind of get them ahead. I've noticed that about his style.
Interesting.
So, I think, I mean, it's at South Carolina. They have that advantage.
Yeah.
LSU with Brian Kelly, I think they're a little mad in a way. I don't know how to describe it. It could be a good kind of mad. It could be a bad kind of mad.
Well, we saw them struggle this week against Nichols, and I know they won by a decent chunk, but, like, yeah, I know what you mean. Like, with Brian Kelly, it's, like, it's not a guarantee that they're going to bounce back. You know, like, this they can very much channel that frustration in a way that turns to, like, apathy and just, like, not caring, you know, as the season goes on. So this is kind of a make-or-break game for LSU in my mind. Like, if they don't win this, their season's done. You know, like, you can kiss the SEC championship goodbye.
I don't even know if that's true, though. That's the thing. I don't even know if that's true, because their loss was to USC. I mean, they'd only have one conference loss. Technically, they'd still be in it.
But, like, look at their schedule.
Yeah, that's kind of the thing.
Like, if they can't beat South Carolina, you're not beating Bama or Ole Miss or even Oklahoma. So, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. I don't know. Oh, can we talk about Florida real quick? We need to talk about Florida. No one's talking about Florida. Why is no one talking
about
Florida?
DJ Lagway, their backup looks so much
better.
Holy
cow. I mean, honestly, I think this is the most clear, like, difference between a team with and without Graham Mertz. I'm gonna give a hot take. I'm going to give a nuclear take right now. Florida is going to beat A&M and Mississippi State and UCF. They are going to be, 4-1 heading into Tennessee. They might be ranked. They might be ranked at some point. I'm just saying, dude. I'm all in on Florida now.
Have they said that they're going to play Lagway instead of Mertz next week?
I have not heard. They have to, though. Like, they have to. Like, he's so much better, dude.
Surely Napier would play the guy with the hot hand. I mean, I get it. I would... You can't feel sorry for players for getting benched in football. That's Mertz how you lose. How you lose your job.
Mertz has had, like, 4 years to get good. Like, he's had so many opportunities. And yeah, and, like, he sucks. Like, just... You've got a five-star recruit who's, like, clearly doing really well for his freshman year. Let him play. Let him learn from his mistakes. Make his mistakes now in a season that doesn't really matter. Like, they went in with zero hopes this year. Like...
If he makes mistakes and Florida still doesn't necessarily have the best year, but they show a lot of hope and promise with this hotshot young guy that Napier can make happy, he'll keep his job.
Yeah, he won't transfer. He'll know he has a job next year.
It makes no sense to try to go with that Mertz. You know what you're getting with Mertz. He is not worth the one Murder Mertz game you get per week.
I love Murder Mertz, dude. It's too good.
I will definitely keep my eye on the Florida-Texas A&M game this week.
Should be fun. Should be a fun one. Other games this week of note. Okay, I'm going to say it. I'm going to go out on a limb and say it, Randy. Notre Dame plays at Purdue. What do you think? Is this...
The Battle of Indiana.
Do you think...
No.
All right.
Yeah, Notre Dame will win that game. Okay. You know how it is.
So. I don't know, man. I'm just looking on the slate now. Like, there are a number of games that, like, yeah, are probably going to end one way, but I could see them ending another. Tulane versus Oklahoma. Oklahoma's kind
of
suspect.
If Oklahoma's not careful, Tulane will come up and beat you. I mean,
this is what I'm saying.
They're like one of the most talented group of five teams. They have a great coaching staff. They have a great quarterback.
Great logo. Great uniforms. What's not
great logo? Great uniforms. Great color scheme.
One other game I need to mention. This one makes me mad. If I'm not gonna lie, Missouri versus Boston College. Boston College is ranked for some reason. This is a ranked matchup somehow.
Because they beat a very fraudulent Florida State team.
It just makes me mad because, like, it's so obvious Missouri is going to win this and be like, yeah, we got another ranked win. It's like, do you, though? Like, do you really have a ranked win over Boston College?
It's going to propel the Missouri hype train even further. I know they're already ranked number six. I mean, how much further can they be hyped?
Their schedule is so it's so unbelievably easy. Like, I actually cannot wait for them to play Alabama. Because you guys are going to expose them. Yeah, but like up until then, Boston College, Vanderbilt, Texas A&M, Massachusetts, Auburn, they're not going to lose a game here. But like,
are some trap games. This is crazy. I'll be honest. They're playing at UMass. Okay,
that's wild. That's such a Missouri move right there. So no, I will be rooting for Alabama to expose probably an undefeated Missouri at that point. They just don't. Like, I'm not saying they're bad, but, like, they're not going to be as good as their record indicates by the end of the season. Like, this is an insanely soft SEC schedule. Easily the easiest.
But they're going to, be, like, 10-2, 9-3, and then have, like, a moral victory about the season, then try to hype up next year.
But, like, if they make the playoffs, dude, it's fraudulent. That's all I'm going to say. Speaking of fraudulent, real quick, a game we didn't talk about. I don't know how we didn't mention this, dude. Auburn losing to Cal. What happened? Did you watch that?
It was Auburn. I don't know what else to tell you.
Okay.
It's Auburn.
Okay. I just know you'd be happy given, you know, your thoughts on that.
Oh, I am very happy.
Okay. Okay.
I don't know how to describe Auburn because they will do that.
You seem kind of scared. You seem kind of nervous.
They just like that.
You seem kind of nervous.
They'll do that. They'll probably still go like 9-3, 8-4 or something. Wow. Scare us.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. We usually play them pretty well, Brian Denny. It's not like this is an odd year. I don't even want to think about the angle next year.
No, we're not gonna go there. Any other games this week, Randy, of note?
Yes. Colorado goes to Colorado State.
You're right.
You remember the game last year was very chippy.
Yes. Yes. It was like the most
Colorado
viewed.
State almost won.
Yeah, it was like the most.
What happens if Colorado loses this game? Like, how much of a meltdown is there going to be? Is the team just going to quit?
Absolutely nothing happens. Quote me on it. Because, man, we saw what happened last season. It was such a disaster, but no one in the media cares. Like, it's not, there is no world in which the Deion hype train falls off the rails because Colorado's bad. Colorado's always been bad. Like, this changes nothing, right? They're going to still hype him up. He's still going to be the dumb Aflac commercials. He's still going to be calling himself the GOAT. Oh, my God. It
was great TV. But yeah. Here's the thing, like, I wonder what that locker room's going to be like if they lose Colorado State game. At that point, I think it's already at this point.
It's so toxic.
Shador, as the leader of the team, does not care about anything other than stat padding for the NFL.
Yeah, 100%.
But it's so ironic because even no matter how much he stat pads, NFL scouts are not stupid. They're going to see that he doesn't know how to work with the kit with the makeup of the team and get the most out of his team. They're going to see that. I get that, you know, the stereotype of scouts often just look at raw stats and look at measurables or whatever. But no, this is going to be taken into account. And plus, part of it is by playing unselfishly and having an unselfish attitude, helping out your teammates in various ways with your play calling and play style, kind of adjusting to help out struggling teammates, whether it's your offensive line or receivers that are struggling or your running back that's struggling. By doing that, you're going to accidentally put up better stats by being unselfish.
By the team being good. Yeah, yeah.
It's a team game. Being an unselfish point guard somehow gets you better statistics.
I know. But, man, what kind of scares me, though, is like, the NFL as a whole, like, I feel like there are so many bad GMs out there who don't care about everything you just said, even though they should. And, like, I could so easily see, like, the Browns drafting this guy.
Oh, my goodness.
Given their track record, you know, with caring about character and whatnot of players. I'm just saying, like, there's going to be a team that drafts him, unfortunately. And it's going to continue the disaster into the NFL. And I'm just sick of it, man. Like, he's gonna bust. I'm not worried about that. Like, he's not going to succeed in the NFL. I'm positive of that because of everything you just said. Like, I can't believe this stuff flies in college. This will not fly in the NFL. Like, can you imagine this guy in an NFL locker room? This, like, 22-year-old...
trying to come up like he owns the place. Dude, they would chew him alive. He's a rookie. Just because you're prime time, they're gonna haze the crap out of him,
too. Oh, my God. Yeah, so in a way,
so great because you're Deion son. You haven't done nothing.
It's gonna be Johnny Manziel on steroids. Like, it's going to be disastrous, but it's going to happen.
Granted, now we'll give Shador this: is that he hasn't technically done anything like off the field horrible
yet,
but he still has a terrible attitude.
Extremely terrible, and I get it. Like, his dad raised him. Like, yeah, what are you gonna do? Like, he's had no good role models his entire life. But, like, God, dude. Oh, my God.
But, no, I think Deion's attitude works personally for him.
Yeah.
The problem is that he tries to instill it in other people in a way that does not work, that just turns him into total shit. Yeah,
not for a quarterback, not for the leader of the team. Like, it's one thing when you're a DB, you're kind of like riding solo. You know what I mean? Like, you're doing these one-on-one
exactly. It works for that position.
Yeah. It doesn't work.
Because Deion, primetime Deion is, he's... as a player, like, his personality was great. He was fun. His little kind of, he was kind of cocky, but, you know,
gets in the offense's head.
You know,
right?
He would joke around. He made jokes. He was funny. He would even joke around with his teammates that he was mad they got that interception because he was going to get it.
Yeah.
Stuff like, it's funny. It's endearing. But the way he's doing it now with the favoritism towards his son and all this, it's just, it's not, he doesn't know how to have a handle on the locker room.
No clue. Man, am I mad. Any other games, Randy, we want to talk about? Or does that about conclude it for this week's episode?
I think that's it. I think that about concludes it. It looks like another, I know we're going to regret saying this, but it almost looks like outside of the Vandal Wisconsin game, there's not a whole lot going on.
I appreciate the jinx. So we have a really good weekend, Randy, of sports. I'm really looking forward to this game. Pray for me. Randy, all I ask is because I do know you do control, like, the outcome of the universe. Like, I've come to peace with Wisconsin losing. Just please let it be competitive. That's all I'm asking for out of your control here, okay?
All right. Well, I will be sure to let the team know.
All right. I really appreciate it. And I appreciate you folks at home listening to this. This has been a very fun week of the Jim Bobcast. And as always, now more than ever, Roll Tide.
On Wisconsin.